Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Since China stopped accepting recycled materials from the United States several months ago, there has been a glut and backlog of what most people routinely tossed in the recycling bin each week. Many municipalities have changed how and what can be recycled. Plastic is especially troublesome. It's durable and hard to get rid of. Just ask Pennsylvania farmers. Our guests today have an idea that could change that. Joining us on today's program is Dr. Bill Lamont, Professor Emeritus of Vegetable Crops at Penn State University. Professor Lamont, or Dr. Lamont, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Scott. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also, Jim Garth, retired Penn State agricultural engineer. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott.
And finally, we have Ron Davis, who goes by Ron the Bagman. He's an area recycling advocate. Should I call you Ron the Bagman? Or?
You can just call me Ron.
Okay, Ron, we'll go from there. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. All right, I don't know whether everyone out there realizes how much of a problem plastic in particular is to not only recycle, but to get rid of, actually get rid of plastic. One of the reasons it's so popular is because it is so durable, it is so difficult to destroy. So give us a sense of how much of a problem plastic is in this world, in this country, and in this state.
Thanks, Scott. It is. It is durable. Think about all the products in your home, just your home environment that you use every day, your pill boxes, your wrappers for your bread that comes in, your little tabs on it, your orange juice caps. I mean, it's just used in a myriad of products. And since it is durable, it doesn't break down. So it's not like manure or something like that's going to break down the environment and go away. So it is definitely a problem. It's a worldwide problem. Think about the Pacific Ocean and the island that's floating around out there. You know, there's a lot of organizations that have been working on it. 4oceans.com, Plastic Bank, are trying to clean up the environment. It is a tremendous, tremendous problem. And when I was in India and I talked to a gentleman over there, won the first World Food Prize. So you're talking about somebody that was really knowledgeable about agriculture. He knew that plastics could do a lot for agricultural production, but he was worried about what do you do with the product when you're done with it, to recycle it or reuse it. And that's the problem we run into. There's a myriad of plastics out there. But we need to deal with how do we use them? How do we use that energy value that's captured in that plastic? It has the same energy value as petroleum or natural gas.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that during the program. But first, I want to establish the scope of the problem that we're dealing with. Ron, China, my guess is a few months ago, we talked with someone from Lancaster County. Lancaster County was one of the first to change their recyclable plan of what actually could be recycled. Stop taking paper. There was so much in the way of recyclables that people would just really weren't recyclables that people would just toss in the bin. So recycled pollution, if you will, mm-hmm. polluted recyclables. So when it comes to China, when China said we're not going to take United States American recyclables anymore, why did that create a problem?
Well, the Chinese government, along with many other nations, discovered that we are sending our garbage is garbage. It's very dirty. A lot of the agricultural community, the dairymen and growers, your products that are grown on top of your field mulch, that black strips of, you see miles and miles.
Yes.
And as you're driving around outside and you look over at a farm and a dairy farm and you see all that trench cover, bale wrap, it has dirt. Scott, it has a lot of dirt. And the weight to rate ratio, how much dirt is actually adhering to the plastic when the dairymen feed their heifers and they cut it off, it has aggregate and dirt. The Chinese government and many other country said, wait a second, we're free garbage man. We're taking this material, bringing it in and trying to wash it, process it, and make a pellet out of it. Now, we in America, the brokers and everybody across the world thinks we have the greatest trash in the world. We do. We have a lot of it, and it has a value, but we're not processing it properly in the States to get it into China.
It needs to be clean.
It needs to be pelletized. The clean, your industrial grade, engineer grade, clean plastics from industry, you can still get into China if it's processed in the pellets. But we, as in Pennsylvania, our dairy farmers and growers, they have an issue. They don't want to burn it. It's a carcinogenic. It costs a lot of money to dispose of in the landfill. It's backing up our landfills. Granted, the incinerator is capable of burning it, but the dairymen, they have a heart that says, what am I doing this? Why am I throwing this away? And I just kind of worked it backwards, and more dairymen and growers came to me and said, Bagman, can you take my plastic? And through the past 4 or 5 years working with Dr. Lamont and Jim Garth, the value of the plastic is so cheap with our natural gas. Our oil, the availability of virgin resin is killing the value of our material because it just crushes it. Why would you actually spend money on a recycled product that's dirty when you can buy grade A resin, virgin, cheaper than it costs you to go get it and process it? That's where we're at. We have too much of a good thing, and nobody wants it.
So what we hear most often today about China has to do with trade. China saying they're not going to accept recyclables from the United States, okay, it has a lot to do with it being polluted, that it's dirty, it's not profitable for them. Does the trade war come into this at all?
The best of my knowledge, I think it's an environmental issue more than a trade issue. We need plastics to be recycled. Everybody needs a resin to make a product. You can blame China with the green fence not taking it. Well, you would think,
what's the green fence?
That is the law that China banned recycled materials coming in from the States. And they do not want our garbage. There's hundreds of thousands of containers literally being refused at the piers all over the world, being dumped in the ocean. Mm-hmm. It's a never-ending problem.
And we have seen those horrible photographs of, as Dr. Lamont mentioned, of plastics floating in the ocean. We've heard how there are many aquatic animals that are being killed. It's just not straws that are—I mean, that seems like such a little thing, plastic straws,
right,
when you see those photographs of what's floating in the right ocean. And I don't know whether you can answer this question or not, because we're going to get into— maybe a solution here of what to do to get rid of plastics, but there's tons and tons of plastic waste floating in the ocean. Is there any way to solve that problem?
I think that the problem is that I know at Penn State they're looking at the microparticles, doing research on microparticles in the ocean of plastic. You've already missed the boat. You want to catch that plastic before it ever gets in the ocean. And that's the problem. It gets in the streams in the countries that, surround the Pacific, and then it floats down, and next thing you know, it's in the ocean, and eventually it'll break down into microparticles. So no, I think that the opportunity is to catch it before it ever gets there and utilize it before it ever gets in the ocean. Utilize it for some purpose, like we're going to talk about later, about incineration or burning it for the energy.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense to me, and especially in a lot of developing countries where energy is an issue. So, yeah.
We have a phone call from Heather in Lingolstown. Heather, you're on the air.
Hi. My comment is we can't solve world problems unless we start with ourselves. And I really believe that every high school, middle school student should have to spend 1-2 days at the incinerator. If we all sat there for one day and looked at the amount of food waste that comes from the grocery stores, packaged lettuce and salad mixtures that are in plastic bags, looked at what's getting thrown away in terms of our own waste out of our houses, the chairs, the grandfather clocks that someone needed. If we spent one day just to see the amount of stuff that's getting thrown away from our neighbors, the plastic that isn't getting recycled, the glass that isn't getting recycled. I mean, I think it would go a long ways, because people just look at it like, I've put it out front, the garbage man takes it, I don't have to think about it anymore. And we really all need to individually start thinking about it.
Heather, thank you very much for your call. And this goes exactly what Heather mentioned, Dr. Lamont, goes exactly to what you were saying, that the best idea is not to create the waste in the first place. But, I mean, is that realistic? We, as Americans, are so used to, I mean, I have to admit that 25 years ago, I was a little skeptical that Americans would take to recycling because it was so easy to just toss everything in the trash. Well, Americans did. Americans did become, they recycled. But then they would just toss anything in the recycling bin, whether it could be recycled or not. So, you know, maybe her idea, Heather's idea of having people go to an incinerator and see what kind of trash is created, maybe that's a good idea. But, I mean, can you just kind of emphasize what that means to, what can you actually do in your home? And we will talk about on the farm as well, because much of our conversation today is going to be about agriculture. But what someone can do in the home to not create so much plastic waste?
Well, I think you can reuse plastics. You know, you have the bags your bread comes in. You can use it to pick up your dog poops or something like that.
See, I do that.
See, okay, Scott, you're already on the road there.
But it doesn't seem like my dog poop bag is going to save the world.
You're not going to save the world. But I think the ability to really realize how much plastics are put in. And people want to do the right thing, I think. Like Heather said, they want to go ahead and recycle. And there are products that you throw in your recycling there is no market for. So they're going to end up in the landfill. That's the problem. I think people, the more we can really say how much plastics is out there, these plastics can be reused, these can't. Okay, let's figure a solution for using those other plastics. Let's figure out how do we eliminate them so they don't get in the environment and become a problem.
Why does it seem as though there's so much emphasis on plastic straws? Granted, I know there are billions of them around the world, but why so? And I know that, you know, we have fish, we have dolphins, whales that are swallowing plastic straws because they're so small. That's one thing. But that just seems like such a minute part of what this issue is.
I think you're exactly right. I think that's a bogus issue. Straws. I think there's a bigger issue of what the plastics in general across the board. That's the problem, not straws. Straws are just something somebody thought up, okay, we're going to ban straws. No. Look at the whole big problem. Our waste management system is what I call archaic. It's primitive. It's a primitive type of system, and it needs to be looked at and changed, and we can do it.
Why do you say it's primitive?
Just think about picking up your trash and throwing it in the landfill. I mean, what?
Just moving it from one place to the other.
Yeah, right. You're putting it in the landfill. You're burying stuff that has energy value in it. That plastic has energy. And we've been putting it in the landfill since the beginning and inception of plastics. It makes no sense at all. It's ridiculous.
We're going to talk about some solutions. These gentlemen have some ideas. Coming up in just a moment, you're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about recyclables today. We're going to be talking about agriculture and recycling plastic in just a moment. Our guest today, Ron Davis, also known as Ron the Bagman, an area recycling advocate, Jim Garth, a retired Penn State agricultural engineer, and Dr. Bill Lamont, professor emeritus of vegetable crops at Penn State. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Jim Garth, I'm not ignoring you here. You said you wanted to follow up on something that Bill had said a few minutes ago.
Well, I have to concur with Heather that it definitely does boil down to education. And I'd like to expand upon what Bill said. You might recall the three R's, reduce, reuse, recycle, and they are listed in order, by the way. So to answer the question, Bill was talking about recycling, but I would like to go back to the upper R, which is part of the hierarchy of solid waste management. The first and most important is to reduce, and that is don't buy some of these crazy plastic toys for the kids. My three grandchildren have so much plastic toys sitting around. They're young. They're less than 4 years old. But I have estimated that there are 5,000 pieces of plastic toy among those three children that have been purchased by grandparents, loving grandparents, and so forth. But 90% of them are probably made over in China. They're imported here into the U.S. They don't have a chasing arrows on the bottom that says what resin they are. So what happens is you have all these plastic pieces that are, in 10 years, the parents will end up saying, well, you know, little Billy grew up. Now it's time to get rid of this plastic toy. What do I do with it? Well, it ends up in the trash.
Okay, but Jim, all right.
So
I mean, you said you
reduce. Don't purchase the product to begin with.
I agree with what you're saying with reduce. But let's talk about another R, realistic. Are parents, yes, when little Billy wants that toy that is so, he wants it so badly, and the parent wants to make little Billy happy, is he going to say no because it's made of plastic?
He should say no because it's made of plastic. Yeah.
What kind of parent are you?
I'm a grandparent, too. What is wrong with a wooden block? Put the kid out in the sandbox, give him or her a wooden block, and say, here, have at it. Use your imagination. And mm-hmm. that's a real problem. And it's keeping up with the Joneses. So we have to have plastic toys for little Billy. So because the Joneses next door have it. So little Billy wants it. So that's,
well, little Billy could be psychologically
problem,
scarred if he doesn't get that toy. But and I'm being sarcastic,
yes,
here, but I guess what I'm getting at, but realistically, you know, we made the point that there was so much plastic out there. I mean, if we just went through the amount of plastics we come into contact with every day. Yeah, I'm looking at this microphone that is right in front of you. Is this plastic? Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. That's holding the microphone. I never thought about that before.
That's
but
right.
The mic stand, what's holding it? There's plastic all the way, this whole thing that's holding the mic. That's just one thing. This whole board, I have knobs here that all are plastic. So I guess what I'm saying is realistically, we can't avoid plastic.
Well, I'm an engineer, and one of the things that engineers need to be taught, and again, it boils back to what Heather said, is education, and it needs to be at the university level, educating engineers to do what we call design for recyclability. Mm-hmm. And that means that this microphone, when it's served its useful life, it should be designed so that you can easily dismantle it and separate the various pieces, the steel into the scrap barrel that direction, the plastic into another direction, the other materials down their path, and then view it not as trash but as a resource that's out of place, maybe.
So that's not happening now?
Not happening well, not happening enough.
Okay. All right. And we got a lot of phone calls on hold, and we will get to you in a few minutes. But I did want to bring up, I've been teasing a possible solution to this. You know, we have two Penn State professors retired who, you know, agriculture is part of your background. So you have come up with, I don't know whether it's a you, because South Korea is where this burner, what's it called, by the way?
Well, it was called GR Technologies, and it was a high-temperature plastic burner that was first in the world, actually. We had the first one imported to the United States, to Penn State, and our intent was to prove the technology so that we could begin to give people a second opportunity to reuse their plastics as a fuel, a high-temperature combustion. We know that plastic can burn at 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit, plus or minus. It can burn equivalent in emissions to number two fuel oil, which is a common household heating oil. So plastic.
So how does the burner work?
It's very complicated to try to describe on radio, but if you view it as a much like an oil burner in a home, where the plastic is metered into a combustion chamber, which is about the size of a 5-gallon pail, and this combustion chamber rotates, and the burner starts on number two fuel oil to get the burner up to temperature. Then it converts over to plastic pellets that are metered into this combustion chamber. And then what happens is there are little like wipers or paddles that take the plastic and rotate it within that drum. The drum is now at 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It is cherry red. It's glowing hot. And then the plastic comes in. And I think it's important to go back to basic physics here, which maybe your listeners don't want to hear about. But you have to realize that solids don't burn. Liquids don't burn. It's the gaseous phase that actually burns. So when you burn a stick of wood, for example, you think it's a solid burning. It is not. It is being elevated to the temperature that it gives off a gas, and the gases then burn. So the same with a car. You know, people think, well, the liquid gasoline burns. It isn't liquid gasoline that burns. It is the gaseous phase or the vapor that actually does the combustion. So in this Korean-based burner, the plastic is converted in that hot combustion chamber from a solid to a liquid and then to a gas. And then it has enough oxygen blown into the system that it can continue or sustain that combustion.
How is this different than the technology that we've utilized in the past?
The difference, I would say, would be that nobody had really developed anything to burn plastic cleanly. And if you get temperatures in the 2,000 degree Fahrenheit range, you can get very few products of incomplete combustion, meaning they call them PICs. They're products of incomplete combustion. They are products that you don't want to breathe. A burn barrel, for example, has a very, very low temperature. It's around 700 degrees Fahrenheit, and there you get a large amount of products of incomplete combustion occurring, and that's when you get that smoke wafting down to, you know, throughout the whole neighborhood from the burn barrel. Well, if you can elevate that temperature, sparge it with air, in other words, push a lot of air into that system, you can actually get it up to 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Then you're basically creating a very clean combustion situation.
I think Ron mentioned, I don't know, maybe Ron wasn't you, or maybe it was Bill, but carcinogens. Mm-hmm. With burning plastic, when you say that it's clean, is it safe? Is it healthy? Okay, healthy, maybe not word. Is it detrimental to health, I guess I should say?
Well, it is conforming to the U.S. EPA regulations, which set standards for emissions that are given off from any type of combustion unit. So the answer is, it is as clean as our government will allow or prescribes for, whether it be an internal combustion engine in your car or your diesel bus going down the road, or it can be for any type of combustion or heating device. So
this burner right now in this country is at Penn State only. It is in South Korea. What would have to happen to make it commercially available? Who would want to use this?
Well, it could be very useful for many different operations. We looked at specifically for waste plastics from paper mills. When paper is recycled, one of the byproducts or the waste products from a paper mill is a lot of plastic. There's plastic in all types of mailings, you know, mm-hmm. that you get in the U.S. mail. Another area that we looked at was cement kilns, looking at co-firing a cement kiln, blowing air into the system with coal and plastic added together. We also, cement kilns use tire-derived fuel. So cement kiln would be a very good use for waste plastic. A
couple things there: coal and tires. That doesn't sound very clean.
It is very clean. Again, we're looking at whatever EPA prescribes for any type of combustion system, and they have cement kilns. They're very highly regulated as far as emissions.
But cement kilns and, you know, what you've
paper
mentioned,
mills.
Paper mills, that does not sound large scale. If I'm a municipality, if I'm a county, and I'm looking for a way to get rid of my my plastics and make it into energy. Can it be scaled? Can it be used on that scale?
It could be. I'm actually just started talking about what we had looked at specifically, but you could use it for grain drying in the case of farmers. You could use it for heating municipal buildings. It could be used to heat warehouses. So there's a myriad uses that this burner could be applied to.
Would it be able to take all the plastic waste? Okay, nothing takes all, but a larger percentage than what we have now that's being recycled. Would it be able to, again, I'm looking for scale here, that a county or a municipality would be able to do that?
It could be done. The one concern that we had is that not all plastics burn cleanly. We tested this particular burner using the high-density polyethylene and low-density polyethylene, which are very common, the most common plastic resins that you would see around in this country. However, if you get into the number three or the PVC or polyvinyl chloride, the vinyl as they call it also, if you get into them, they are chlorinated compounds, and you start burning chlorinated compounds, you actually generate emissions that would not conform to the US EPA or the Pennsylvania DEP regulations.
So. See, just as you're describing this, Jim, one of the things I'm thinking about is that it is complicated, not just what you're describing of how the burner works, but that maybe people don't realize all the materials that go into a plastic and the different types of plastic that there are out there. Ron, you're pointing at me like I'm right there.
It's the thing we run into in most MRFs, which is a material recycling facility. Jim said about that little arrow on the bottom of your package. 2 and 4, when you look at these numbers and you go, hey, that's a cute little number. What does that mean?
That's what I'm wondering about. Yeah.
You can Google recycled, you can Google plastic symbols, and everyone in their kitchen, it will be a number 1 through 7. Jim said something about the plastics coming in from overseas, not only China, but around the world. Co-mingling as a recycler, that means you take a number 2 and a number 4 and you mix together. That product's useless to recycle. There's the issue. I had a good friend and partner that recycles with me, and we struggle to find out other ways besides burning. We extruded a piece of plastic lumber, co-mingling of many items, because when you tell a recycler, I'm bringing you my potting trays, you don't know if it's a PP or a PS. You throw it all in a bale, and then you try to sell that to China. It's co-mingled. Now it is absolutely useless.
To them.
To anybody who's a recycler, because Jim alluded to the fact that plastics burn and melt at different temperature levels. Mm-hmm. When you try to pelletize and commingle many different products, it's useless. It now becomes a blob. My dairymen and growers in Pennsylvania, they're still permitted to burn in some communities. Other communities and townships have codes and regulations. The fact that the news is starting to get out there that we need to address this issue, that's the simplest part, is to just say, we have a burner. I have West Lampeter Township in Lancaster is the first township to, I took them super sacks, those big polypropylene woven bags. I dropped them off at their center. The farmers and dairymen on their own put it in the sacks, and they called me the other day and said, Ronnie, we have a load for you. They're the first one in the county. Now, Maryland, Harford County, started this about a year and a half ago. They incentivized and encouraged their growers and dairymen. The news is getting out. It's almost like watching paint dry. When you talk about plastics recycling, Jim, if you get it, that young girl Heather who called,
right.
If you really get it and you care, you care. If you don't care and you drive down the highway and just look, count the 1 and see how much plastic's along the road. Try counting the 2 and not seeing garbage. Yeah. It's almost impossible, Jim.
I have one here. Another Scott says, thank you so much for highlighting this important problem that our family truly cares about. We try to practice reduce, reuse, and recycle every day, but we know that it's not solving the problem nationwide or worldwide. We do think education is the key for helping people to care more, perhaps starting in preschool and continuing through public school years. Kudos for research to help reuse plastics for energy and heating. So that's something I'll bet you're glad to hear. Let's take a phone call here from Dale. Dale, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for taking my call. And I'm just calling in to give Ron the Bagman a shout and how he helped my business solve our problem here with recycling. And I'm calling in from a manufacturing and a warehousing distribution side of this situation that we're talking about. And that is the amount of film that we generate at our distribution company here, and the PVC resins. We also have a manufacturing process for vinyl railing that we get a lot of cutoffs and things like that. And for years we struggled with a place to dispose of this material without dumping it into a dumpster that we all know is going to end up in the landfill or over at the incinerator. And Ron Davis and I, actually, we are personal friends. We go back a long time. Ronnie came in, helped us solve that problem. And a few years back, I'm in West Donegal Township over here in Elizabethtown, and we have a recycling requirement for businesses and residents here. And it is a feel-good thing. And it's ironic that I'm on the air right now, because right now on my desk is the weights and measurements that throughout the year that I get from Ron when he comes over, picks all of our plastics up, recycles them, turns them into energy, turns them into a profit, and gets them out of our environment. I'm over 10,000 pounds for 2018. With what has been recycled just from my small business. And I'm not a big business. I'm a 15-employee distribution company of building materials. And if you think about taking that times all the businesses, and we're not even going to bring in the agricultural side, just the business side of it, how much material is being dumped and not being recycled, which I know West Donegal has... I believe a number that they need to hit for a tax credit purpose with Lancaster County.
Hey, Dale, I'm glad you called. Hey, thank you very much. Dale has all kinds of kudos there for you, Ron.
It's nice that not only Dale Walker helps us out. When I approached Dale about recycling his stretch film, I can sell manufacturers their stretch film. I'm self-contained. I'm 100% self-funded. I sell plastic bags, can liners, and stretch wrap. Dale Walker's one of the individuals, Westy's Beer Distributor, he recycles. I can go on and on with small businesses, Pony Express and Leola. They get it. Not only do they buy their stretch film and packaging material from me, I send a truck out, I deliver a pallet of stretch film. I go to their warehouse, drop off the stretch film, pick up a truckload of cardboard, bring the cardboard back, bale it, and then market it here in the States and sell it. The profitability end is the most difficult. When you have to drive to go get a material and then sell it, you can't. The labor rate and yet what you're investing in time, equipment breaks, Scott. Trucks need tires. Everything breaks down. My wife keeps telling me to get a real job. It's funny. But it's there. It could be done if people would just support it.
But I think the point that Dale makes is a real good one, is that one business, and he put some numbers to it, and just multiply that by millions across this country, across the state, across the world. We're going to be talking more about all of this in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about plastic today, plastic waste in particular. Talk about a burner that could possibly be a partial solution, especially when it comes to agricultural products. Joining us today, Jim Garth, retired Penn State agricultural engineer, Dr. Bill Lamont, professor emeritus of vegetable crops at Penn State, and Ron Davis, Ron the Bagman. He's an area recycling advocate. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's go to Dan, who's in northern Lebanon County. Dan, you're on the air.
Hi, Scott. Hey, I got to add a couple of my 3 cents here. Why are we sending stuff to China? I think we're lazy. I once heard that from a lady, a friend of mine, she came here as an immigrant. She says, Americans are lazy. We don't clean our trash. We don't separate our trash. Humans, the best thing we do is ignore the problem and do nothing. I'm a farmer over there by Harper's War Station along the Swanee. You know, tires are much like plastic. They're out in the environment. What do we do with them? They float in the flood, and we had a lot of floods this year. So now I got tires in my fields again, tires on the banks. We got to go pick them up. And the plastic is everywhere. It's in the ocean. Well, everything runs downstream. We all live downstream. So finally it gets to the oceans, and it's a problem. I don't have the answer except it has to start at the top and go to the bottom, and the bottom is the consumer. The colleges have done a lot with technical responses to trying to clean this up, but the individual must be involved with rinsing the residue and keeping the plastic sorted. But we got to use it here. It got to be processed here, and we're lazy. We want to get rid of it, throw it in the receptacle, and get it out of the country. And that is not the answer.
Dan, thank you very much for your call. You guys said as much. I think, Jim, just a few minutes ago, you said we are our own worst enemies when it comes to this issue, right?
We definitely are, and I totally concur with Dan. The real problem is that we need to look at what we would call an infrastructure, and a lot of people, that's a big word, and I wrote the definition here. The infrastructure is the basic installations and facilities on which the continuance and growth of a community, state, etc., depend. And that's very important. We need an infrastructure that can accept these plastics. We do not have it as of right now, but thanks to people like Ron, we're starting to go that direction. It's going to take generations to begin to be educated on that we need something that is sustainable. Also, Scott, we need to look at not the word waste, but we need to look at a resource. It's in the wrong form or in the wrong place, but it is a resource, and we need to get rid of the word disposal. A lot of people say, well, dispose of it, put it out on the curb, the garbage man comes along, whisks it away. Well, that's out of sight, out of mind, and you really need to have an environmental consciousness that says, where is that product that I generated landing? And so Dan's right on, spot on.
Ron, when you said earlier, and when you were talking specifically about farmers, about agriculture, and the amount of dirt that is on some, you know, those black stripes that we see all the time. But, you know, something that Dan mentioned, and it's a simple thing. I say a simple thing, but most people don't do it. And that is clean our waste. In other words, when there is an empty jar, an empty can, wash it out and toss it into, now can, we're talking, not talking about plastic, but still, that people will just toss it in the bin. And when it is in that form, it has to be cleaned. maybe it can't be reused then. So something as simple as making sure you're cleaning your waste, I know that sounds weird, but something as simple as that would be helpful, wouldn't it?
It would help a lot because of the food that's on your mayonnaise and yogurt containers. Since you mentioned Lancaster doing the Big Four, I get emails and phone calls on a regular basis, people wanting me to bring garbage bags of their yogurt containers. It breaks your heart when people are trying and you have to tell them, I'm sorry, I can't take that. It's unusable to me. We here in Pennsylvania, we need a wash system to grind, shred, pelletize, and market all these materials. The funding for it is insane how much it costs. No little guy like me could ever afford to do it the right way. But there are materials we extruded, made plastic lumber. The ag film that the farmers bring me, I have made into trash bags. Every day, that the recycled end and the usability of that plastic is right there. But you have to make a living. And the economy of logistics tells me, to be a free garbage man, you'll go bankrupt. I say it all the time. The farmers say to me, Ron, I don't want to burn this. You mentioned carcinogenics. Any Saturday, rainy Saturday in Pennsylvania, when you're driving down the highway, see those black fumes of smoke going up? That's a dairyman or a grower burning his drip tape, burning his field mulch, burning his trench cover. All these plastics, they bury it in a pit and they continue to burn it because they have nowhere to go. I can't go and pick up trash for nothing. The value of it is making a material that's reusable. Getting contracts with the state and federal government to buy the trash bags, it's almost impossible to get through to anybody. The plastic lumber we extruded, it's a sample, it's a prototype, but that will handle a lot of commingled items. What I have discovered over the 4 or 5 years with Dr. Martin, Mr. Garth, is you cannot escape plastic. It's part of our lives. You're not going to ban it. You're not going to. You can ban shopping bags and want a reusable bag, but I can guarantee you, you take that biodegradable bag and bury it in the landfill, it's right beside an HTP shopping bag. They're buddies the rest of their lives.
Let's take a call from Les in Lebanon. Les, you're on the air.
Yes, I have a greenhouse business, so I generate a lot of plastic pots, and customers always want to know if we're recycling. And yes, we do. And so I do take them to Ron. But there weren't many options if he can't continue to do it. And I know you explained the technology, how they can be burned properly and used. I guess the problem I see is the funding for someone like Ron to keep doing this. And I don't have an answer to that, but that's what I wanted to share.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. And I think he's just kind of reiterating what you had said, Ron. We have in an email here from Cynthia says, thank you for addressing this important topic. I'd like to know why plastic manufacturers are not required to take responsibility for the ultimate environmentally responsible disposal of the products. Manufacturers reap profits by producing this material, but society is left with the environmental cost of its disposal. How can manufacturers be required to take more financial and environmental responsibility for its disposition?
I can answer that one.
Okay.
I'd say I was involved in the Plastic American Society for Plastic Culture, which
what's this organization?
The American Society for Plastic Culture.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Scott, that's a big term.
That is.
We had a lot of the manufacturers in there that manufactured the product, the resins that are used in plastic and the additive people that put the colors in the plastics and all that. We tried for years to get them involved in it, to take some action, you know, to be involved in the recycling or the reuse efforts, and we could never get them to really be interested. And we've talked, Jimmy and I have talked to guys, sustainability officers from ExxonMobil, from Dow, and you just can't get them involved in it. I agree with the caller. I think that the plastic people should be involved in it, in working out either helping with funding to determine how do we go ahead and dispose of the products that they're making a profit on. Mm. And so, yeah, I agree.
We have a question here from Flora. Asked, before 2017, I never saw shredded algae-looking plastic on our eastern shores. In 2017, it was apparent on Rehoboth and up in the remote Cape Breton. Is it Breton? The Atlantic Laboratory area shores. What changed that year and onward that it is visually manifested? Do you know that?
It's called volume. How much is out there?
Really?
I guess,
that's
yeah.
the simplest answer. It just goes and goes and goes and on. You can't stop plastic going into the landfills. You can't stop laziness. The gentleman was right, Scott. People just throw it out.
Right.
They throw it out their windows. Doesn't it irk people that someone at a stoplight, they pull up and they throw their trash out? Don't you just want to go out and say, dude, pick your garbage up?
Right.
And I want to say more than that, and I do, and I offend a lot of people. I go, why are you not recycling that? It's none of your business.
Hey, Scott, if I have a saying, and I don't know whether on air it's a good one, but my buddy told me one time, he says, you know, man's the only one that sh**s in his own nest.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's probably not appropriate for radio, but I get your point. Let's see here. Let's take a phone call from, let's see, who do we have? Gloria. Gloria, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. Yes, I concur totally with the ideas of trying to involve the plastic industry in using the plastics. I'm not a big fan of burning it. And my one idea is anybody researching other products that could be used in place of especially the plastic wraps, because it's an issue in the farm area where I live. And I was thinking about now that hemp will soon be something people can grow. I know there have been multiple uses for hemp that have been identified. It makes ropes and stuff, and it wondered me if maybe there could be a hemp-based product that would then be compostable or at least not as dangerous to burn that researchers will look into.
Thank you very much for your call, Gloria. Any ideas?
What?
It's an organic material.
Right.
Hemp. You're talking about hemp.
Yes.
If it could be made into a product that could be utilized. I always said that plastics, the problem with like plastic mulches and drip tape, if you can make a product like a paper product that works as good as a plastic mulch, yeah, that would be fine. But a lot of times they don't. So you have to have a product that will do the same thing, have the same characteristics as your plastics. And in other words, you're going to be competitive then from a price standpoint and also from an environmental. So yeah.
We only have about 2 minutes left. I want to thank the three of you for being with us today. I think that our audience is always very interested in environmental topics. And I think that there are a lot of people out there thinking today, and maybe there will be some people acting, especially in that reduction area. So I'm not going to ask what is the answer. I think we've touched on a lot of things here, but maybe what is the future? Jim, you said generations and generations. That doesn't make me feel very optimistic.
Well, it's very easy to go down that cynical path, I guess. But I do believe it's going to take generations. And it is an educational thing. We have to teach it at the school level, and it has to start at kindergarten on up. We're seeing some movement in that direction, but it takes people like Gloria to help, you know, ask the question, is there an alternative to plastic? And the other thing I might add, Scott, is we have to go back to that hierarchy of solid waste management, which many people don't know the whole thing, but I should add that I'm not totally in favor of combustion either. I'm in favor of reduce, reuse, recycle, but then the next one would be energy recovery or landfilling and high temperature combustion and so forth. So go back to reduce, reuse, recycle, and that would be my suggestion.
In about 30 seconds, the burner, what's the future? Is this something that could be commercially viable to help reduce the plastic waste problem?
There's no question that burner is very clean burning, and it is a technology that we proved at Penn State through our research and our demonstrations that it is a very viable clean burning process. It's not totally without some air emissions, but it is as clean as any EPA regulated heating source.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Dr. Bill Lamont, Penn State University, Jim Garth, Penn State University, Ron Davis, Area Recycling Advocate. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, we talk about agriculture. It's our annual road trip to the Pennsylvania State Farm Show. That is tomorrow, coming to you from 9 to 10, so be sure to tune in.